Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my absolute pleasure to have as my guest, Vanessa Thompson. Vanessa Thompson, the founder of the Sustainability Experts Group and esteemed host of a globally acclaimed podcast, brings together influential figures shaping sustainable solutions. Notable guests on her show have included Olympian Venus Williams, Rockefeller Foundation's Dr. Raj Shah, viral activist Leah Thomas, and other influential voices. Thompson stands as a 30 under 30 winner recognized by the Global Gurus, and is set to release her upcoming book, Innovative by Nature, in February of 2026. With a profound expertise in ESG financial analysis, Thompson has lent her strategic insights to some of the world's most progressive companies, including Google, United Nations Foundation, Data2X Project, World Bank Group, and Joby Aviation. Her thought leadership extends to publications like the Huffington Post and Berkeley Economic Review. Vanessa has also conducted groundbreaking research alongside Nobel-winning author Dr. Daniel Kamen at UC Berkeley. A distinguished alumna, Thompson earned her BS in Environmental Economics and Policy from the University of California, Berkeley, graduating summa cum laude. She holds an MBA from Santa Clara University. And Vanessa, somewhere in all of this, do you sleep?
Well, that's a very sweet intro. Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. And yes, I have been getting good sleep as of late, so I'm happy about that.
Your schedule is just something that I need a nap just keeping track of. You've got a lot of different irons in the fire, a lot of different categories, but from what I've been able to deduce, you handle those very well and very capably. So,
thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. My first question for you to start off the podcast today is, please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your current life path and your current life passions today.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for that. And thank you for having me on the show. I have really been influenced by a few particular mentors that I think have really shaped my journey. And I think one thing that's been speaking to me as of late is, of course, the passing of Dr. Jane Goodall, who I think has been such an inspiration for so many of us. For me, I read her book over a decade ago called Reason for Hope, which I think is such a beautiful title to begin with. Yes. And she talks about all of the reasons for hope. Now, she's had a very difficult life. She's encountered so many obstacles and challenges and is one of the founders of the animal rights movement today, and has undergone so much turmoil in that journey. She talks about all of the reasons to have hope. And I had read her book. And that had certainly been a huge inspiration to me. I was always really interested in how we can think about creating systems that create impact for both people and planet. That's something that always was a part of my philosophy. And I wanted to figure out ways that we could also bring that to corporations and to bring that to corporations at scale. So that's really what started out my journey. So my journey, I started out at a NASA biofuel startup called Omega. It was a carbon neutral biofuel that was made out of algae. We were going to power cars with this carbon neutral biofuel, which is a very cool startup to work for. Yep. And then, as you mentioned, worked for some larger organizations like the World Bank Group, as well as, of course, some startups as well, too, that all had that clean tech angle. Working through all of those organizations, I noticed that a lot of those organizations ran a lot more lean and were much more innovative and efficient than their counterparts. The question kind of bubbled up in my head as to why is it that sustainable organizations are so much more efficient? Why are they quicker to market? Why are they better at developing IP? And why are they better at retaining talent as well, too, retaining that small team that wants to fight for that mission? So you mentioned the book, of course, coming up. That's what started me asking that question and wanting to dive into the research in that regard. So when you ask about the experiences, I think that, of course, those mentors play a huge role in each of us. So I want to give a huge shout out to Dr. Jane Goodall for all of the incredible work that she's done, for really helping me ask those initial questions that led me on that path later.
And you know, with Dr. Goodall's work, one of the things I think she established early on is that we as human beings, whether we're in business, whether it's nonprofit, whether it's for profit, we can learn a lot from just watching how animals interact with each other, how they engage in community, what type of leadership hierarchies they have, how they share leadership. I mean, we can learn a lot from animal behavior. Let's face it, Vanessa, they were here probably long before we got here.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that's one of the principles of my book is biomimicry. There's a lot of innovation that corporations specifically can learn from looking at nature and looking at animal behavior that's incredibly powerful. So there's this one new medical technology that's come out that's really great at healing wounds and tissues. So after surgery, for example, it's very difficult to put in kind of metal or anything hard in the body to hold together those tissues. So instead, they looked at muscles, the muscles that grow on the sides of boats or the sides of shorelines. And they saw that this tissue was able to adhere to wood under extreme conditions. A hurricane can come through and those muscles will still be clinging to that little piece of wood right there. So how is it that they're able to be so strong? So scientists mimicked that and created this whole new compound that's able to heal tissues together right after surgery, which increases the survival rate significantly. So there's so many scientific breakthroughs and corporate breakthroughs that are happening now by looking back at animals. And of course, I think Jane Goodall is a huge influence in that. It's certainly something I'm seeing with a lot of great innovators today, that they're seeing a lot of great IP come out by just looking at nature. And I always like to say that nature is 4 billion years of R&D testing, tried and tried again. And that evolution is a great way of testing out your products as well.
Just got to ask you one other question. You've mentioned IP a couple of times. IP, is that intellectual property? Am I correct?
Intellectual property. Yeah. So this can be in any particular domain. That's just the legal kind of threshold that holds on to it. Be able to say that that corporation owns that particular innovation or idea. That's the legal terminology for it. But you can really just think of it as any kind of great breakthrough or innovation.
Yep. And that's usually, that covers, like, my understanding, copyright and trademarking. Am I correct with that as
Similar.
Well too? And
yeah.
It protects kind of like trade secrets in business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a neophyte when it comes to Silicon Valley, you know, initiatives. So I am going to be the consummate learner today and you're going to be the consummate teacher. So.
Oh, nice. You're very nice.
Well, my mantra of the podcast is we're all students and teachers, so let's learn from each other. So
yeah.
Every guest I have is a teacher, and I'm the learner in that situation. So For our audience, what are sustainability practices? How can they accelerate business interventions? And are there benefits to sustainability practices that transcend the world of business?
Yes, absolutely, is the short answer. I think that sustainability is often seen as something in addition to business policies that you have to do. If that is your philosophy, that's not going to help you run lean. That's not going to help you run efficiently. And that's not going to be effective in the long-term strategy. What I look at is the intersection between innovation and sustainability. And that really happens when you actually have a truly authentic core mission. Now, that might be more surrounding people, that might be more surrounding governance, or it might be more surrounding sustainability. But if you can really harness that core mission that feels authentic to your executive team, and you can integrate that into the core business model of the business, that's where you start to see all of the innovations increase exponentially compared to their counterparts who are not able to do the same thing. And one of the reasons for that is we talked about retaining that small team. When you're actually able to say, hey, I'm not just going to hire you and give you a series of tasks and pay you on a paycheck and you go home. This is really about something bigger than your job. This is about contributing back to society. This is about contributing back to the world. Suddenly, they're going to be a lot more invested and you see a huge amount of employee engagement increases. So there's one case study in my book that I mentioned, which is about UC Santa Cruz during the 2008 financial crisis. Normally during recessions, morale is on an all-time low. And they actually decided to get rid of their employee engagement programs and replace it with a zero waste program, which is essentially where you try to get rid of your landfill or all of the waste that you're going to be sending to landfill. And you replace it with recycling or compost programs or something like that. It's a very simple initiative. They're not even baking that into the core mission. But it, in terms of the KPIs, it improved so much more in terms of their employee engagement than their actually employee engagement programs. So when you think about retaining brilliant talent, when you think about investing in innovation, which is a key element of building that core team, you often see that these organizations are able to retain that core talent for a long period of time and engage them in the work so that they are actually able to be more productive and to create more value. So that's one of the many examples in which sustainability, when it's baked in properly into the business model itself, ends up being really valuable. I'll also just mention one other principle, which is a case study called Barry Callebaut. Barry Callebaut is a chocolate company. They produce one in every five bites of chocolate. And they had a really, really big problem. Chocolate actually comes from the seeds of a cacao bean, but there's a whole cacao bean surrounding it that has a delicious fruit outside of the seeds itself. And that fruit was just getting thrown away. So 70% of the bean that they were producing was going straight into the trash. Now they were paying production, they were paying the workers, they were paying the farm, they were paying for all of the resources that contributed to it, but they were throwing away 70% of what they were producing. And so they said, let's actually work with the team on the ground. Let's collaborate with the farmers that know best about this tree. It's not for somebody who necessarily is an executive, it's somebody who's working with this tree day in and day out, and ask them what they think about our next innovation. And they learned that you can use this fruit for liqueurs, you can use it for pharmaceuticals, cosmetics, all sorts of wonderful properties come from all these other aspects of the plant. And so they created this internal startup that was just on R&D based on all of these different products that they could come up with from the fruit. So that's something that, of course, is very sustainable because we're wasting less, but it's also highly innovative because you're already paying for the same amount of cost to produce this, but suddenly you have all of these new streams of revenue generation. You're not just going to the cooks that wanted to buy that chocolate before. You can now offer them new culinary products with this fruit. You can also go to the cosmetic market. There was a whole new set of cosmetics that you can create from it. Pharmaceutical market, there was all sorts of health benefits that came from this particular fruit that they could try to harness. So what you see is this principle in the book is called waste to value. What are all the things that you're wasting in your business and how can you turn them into new revenue streams? And that's true for us as individuals as well too. There's so much that we overlook and waste in our day-to-day lives that could be really helpful. It could even be our time towards certain things. It could even be a skill set that we're overlooking. And so when I think of sustainability, I think of it as a catalyst for innovation. And there's seven principles to do that. Waste of value is one of them.
Well, what I like is that with sustainability practices you've been describing, collaboration is a big part of the process and getting individuals who are part of the organization to buy in, for lack of a better term. But it's like I think most individuals, if they feel that they have a purpose in the organization, they're connected to something bigger than themselves, morale's going to improve. They're going to find a greater sense of purpose. There's almost, Vanessa, like there's a spiritual awareness component to being connected to something greater than yourself in that organization. And I think that sustains, to me, individuals to stay with the mission longer and enhances retention.
Well, absolutely. And I think that it just makes logical sense that if you truly believe in the organization, you're going to fight for it. You're not just working for that organization. You're going to fight for that organization. We say collaboration in a lot of different contexts. And I think it's worth noting that this is not an easy process. We say collaboration as, oh, we'll just get along with everyone. Collaboration isn't necessarily just about getting along with everyone, but finding a structure in which everyone can fight for the same vision, which is incredibly different. And it's incredibly challenging to do. And very few organizations are able to do it, but the ones that do are able to sustain themselves. There's one great example of this that's called Red Sea Global. It's another case study from the book. And they're a hotel development chain. They come into a particular area and they build a big, beautiful luxury hotel. Now, traditionally, that kind of business is not considered to always be the most ethical to the community because you're going into a rural area and you're telling people to potentially move out of that area. so that you can build this big, beautiful hotel. And then there's always, of course, the implications that the surrounding community will have, right? You don't necessarily know how it's going to impact the locals in that particular area. But they wanted to do something different. They said, okay, let's actually collaborate. Let's actually think about that core mission and bringing people together, not just within our organization, but with the whole community and with all of those stakeholders. And so they went to the local people and they said, okay, what do you want? We're going to help you with that. We're going to partner with you. What are your goals? And they asked for two things that most businesses would completely blow off if they first heard about it. They asked for a banana farm and they asked for sailboats, their traditional sailboats of that particular region. Most businesses would look at that and say, well, that's great, but we do hotels. It has nothing to do with what we do as a business. But they said, no, let's try to combine this goal with our business model. Let's see where it overlaps. And so they did invest in miles and miles and miles of great agricultural land, which ended up becoming a very unique farm-to-table experience for all of their guests. And they did invest in those sailboats, the traditional sailboats of that particular culture, and taught the locals on how to ride them, which means that there's a very unique sailing experience at all of their hotels that people come from all over the world to have this one place that can give them that specific sailing experience that they can't get anywhere else. And so what we see here is that doing something that was a little bit out of the ordinary to collaborate with their stakeholders ended up giving them a very unique value proposition that no other competitor in the market could offer. And so when we're thinking about sustaining ourselves as a business, we have to think about our competitive advantage and our unique value proposition. How are we going to stand out? How are we going to compete? Because ultimately, that's what's going to help us sustain ourselves. And oftentimes, when you collaborate with others, you come up with that unique competitive advantage that you never would have thought of by yourself. So this is a great example of what you were saying of this collaboration. It's very difficult to do. It's very difficult to pull off. But one of the sources of thinking about how you can collaborate in a way that's effective for your business is by first listening and then going out of your way to making sure that you can actually take that request and make it happen.
Part of sustainable leadership would be being willing to share your power, being willing to talk to those individuals who are very familiar with the organization, with the operation, the stakeholders that have been around for a while and say, okay, how can we pull resources? How can we look at what we have and take it to another level? Yeah. And that's a secret to me of innovation. You don't innovate in a vacuum. You innovate by incorporating different perspectives and then synthesizing those into something that's going to create a greater product, increase morale throughout the company, and also increase revenue streams.
Yeah.
And say, make you stand out in the industry.
Absolutely.
One of the other things I wanted to ask, and I know you've alluded to this before, I think, in other podcasts, is a systems approach to enhance innovation. What I understand about systems approach is that we take a look at the system. How can we improve the system? It's never the fault, usually, of the individual employee in that system. It's how can we tweak the system so that we are utilizing our staff in a more efficient way and accomplishing the mission. So can you talk a little bit about how a systems approach contributes to innovation and why that's so important?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what's really important to understand is when we're thinking about any of these things like innovation, creativity, new product development, new revenue generation, all of these things seem very tangible, right? And we have to create a structure and a series of KPIs and a process or a system to make each of these things happen. And so we can't, you know, I think a lot of leaders, they'll go to their board or their team and say, okay, we need to create more innovative strategies, come up with a list for me. And that normally doesn't get them very far, right? So creating a system is all about creating a structure for creativity and for innovation. So Disney is a perfect example of this. Disney actually created a structure in each of their offices around innovative ideas. Now, Disney's known for being very creative, very out of the box, and they actually built their physical office space designed around that. So there's three types of meeting rooms that you can book in a Disney office. The first is crazy, wild ideas, out of the box, completely out of the ordinary. The second is about scaling all of those down. Okay, let's look at all the crazy ideas that we have. Which ones do we want to pick? Which ones do we want to prioritize and go forward with? And the last one is execution. Okay, now we've selected our idea. Here's our roadmap for getting here, and here's how we're going to go about it. And so what that enables is saying, okay, if you want a crazy idea, you have to book this kind of room, which completely changes the mindset of everybody going into that room, because suddenly they're ready for all of those crazy, wild ideas. Whereas if someone was ready for executing the idea and another person's ready for crazy brainstorming, they're going to say, okay, no, that's not what this meeting was about. And there's going to be conflict there. And you may not hear a brilliant idea that's off the wall, right? So when you think of those first kind of ideas, right, is the first kind of idea saying, okay, we want a banana farm, but we're a hotel company, right? That's the first one that you hear where you're kind of getting all of your stakeholders in, you're going through all of those ideas, and then you have to go through, process it, and then execute. And so whenever I'm working with a client, or something that is also mentioned quite a bit in the book, when you're thinking about building a system, you actually have to create a structure for creativity to make it happen. And you have to create metrics and KPIs that support that.
Yeah. I've always liked the system approach because you can do changes very incrementally and it's ongoing evaluation. And then you can tweak it as you go along and you're constantly getting input from your stakeholders, your employees, and leaders function more in terms of a resource, in terms of they have their work organization teams and they say, well, this is a problem that we have. This is an issue that we have to work on in the organization. Let me know what you need for resources and then just let them do their work and come up with the recommendations. So the Sustainability Experts Group, I know you're the founder of that.
Yes.
Tell our audience about the makeup of the group, what the mission of that group is, and how you function to promote sustainable leadership practices throughout the globe.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, first question was based on the question that we initially talked about, which is why is it that these clean tech organizations are able to develop IP quicker, build that core set of talent, and go to market faster? What is it about that? And so the book and the research around that was really developing out those principles that would be able to be used for any organization, not necessarily within the clean tech sector, but any organization that wanted to think about greater innovation within their organization. From that, we decided to help some organizations do that. So, of course, we have speaking and workshops, but we also do ongoing consulting to really help businesses get to the next level of their creativity and innovation goals. One of the core challenges that a lot of businesses are facing right now is greater uncertainty in the market. There's greatest levels of uncertainty that we're facing at this time right now. Companies don't stay on the Fortune 500 list for very long, and it's a much shorter time period than they did back in the 1950s to now. And so we're seeing increased need for creativity and innovation because we also have increasing competition, increasing adoption of technological changes, and we have to be able to adapt to each of those things. And innovation is the solution to that. So helping organizations think about what is their core purpose, what is their core mission, and how can we create products and new sources of revenue generation that support that in a way that also fits their timeline and competitive goals. So that was the core purpose of the organization. I mentioned we have the consulting and speaking side. We also decided to do a podcast so that anyone can tune in and listen to some of our insights. And I'm somebody who always loves case studies, as you might have noticed from all of the case studies that I mentioned, because I think it's so helpful to look at another businesses that have either succeeded or failed based on that same principle, rather than just theoretical research, to really understand, okay, there's a business that's already done this and they've done well at it. We wanted to bring in world-class leaders in every episode from a different industry, talking about their practical business advice of what actually worked and what didn't. As you mentioned, we brought on Olympian Venus Williams. She also runs 3 clean tech businesses, in addition to her work as an Olympian. And of course, a lot of social good that she does as well, too. She has a fashion brand that's Athletic Leisure, that's specifically for high-performing athletes. So not all athletic wear is effective for somebody performing at that level, right? You have to have even kind of more train for to be able to perform at that level. And of course, you need the right equipment to be able to do that. So she created her brand called 11. That was all kind of around the idea that you want to compete not just to a 10, but to an 11 and go compete to the next level. So she talked about building that business from scratch. She talked about all of her clothing and equipment is actually made from recycled plastic and it's endurance material. She talked about who she decided to hire and how she built a relationship with them and how to build a core team like that. Also her personal challenges. She talked about that on the podcast as well. We had Eric Schoenberg, who's the former CEO of Inc. Magazine, come on, talk about news and how do you decipher facts in an era of AI. So we take on really different issues, but what we wanted to do is to help people get practical business advice from these really great leaders, because that's not something that they always get. They might get theoretical research on what they can do next, but they don't get the practical advice. So that's the whole idea around it.
Yeah, I think theory is great, but I think individuals want to know practically, what do I need to do to build a sustainable business? What have you learned from your mistakes or your missteps or your obstacles that I can use as information to build my own sustainable business? I think innovation goes on a continuum. We need to continue to modify our innovation needs, and we need to continue to innovate as the business climate dictates, as the social climate dictates, as the environmental climate dictates. All of those, to me, go hand in hand to determine how we innovate, when we innovate, and to the extent that we innovate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I've learned so much from each of the guests that have come on to see how they've opened up vulnerably about their particular missions and causes. Venus opened up about having an extreme disease that she is extremely exhausted all of the time because of, and still going to the Olympics after that. So that's kind of some really interesting stories that I think motivate each and every one of us.
And when we were first introduced, and I got to give a shout out to Noemi Barris, a great podcast agent.
She's great.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She has introduced me to some wonderfully, you know, just brilliant and, you know, individuals who she thought would be a great match for the podcast. And when she first introduced us, the first thing I did was listen to your interview with Venus Williams. It was like two friends having a conversation around a campfire. It flowed nicely. You set such a nice environment for her to share what she needed to share and share at a level that maybe she hadn't anticipated even sharing with you, but it was a great interview. I can see why your podcast is so well thought of and well received, and you know why you are as good as you are at what you do, because you're a good listener as much as anything.
Wow, thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you.
Well, you're welcome. What qualifications does an individual have to be an impactful, innovative, sustainable leader?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that really comes down to thinking about what is your core mission and what does the business market offer? So what I mean by that is, let's say your mission is particularly, let's take Jane Goodall's example, animal rights, for example. And that's your core mission as an individual. You also have to think about what does the market offer? What is the market willing to pay for? And what are the business models that are showing to be successful in the market itself? And then how can you overlap the two? And this is where you get your unique competitive advantage. This is something we saw with Red Sea Global. And I think it's also something that Jane Goodall exhibits quite a bit as well, too. She's been incredibly effective in conserving huge areas of land that other conservationists haven't been able to do. She saw that she needed to provide jobs and income sources to all of the local communities to make that happen. So she found business models and effective ways to do that. So when you're thinking about, okay, I want to innovate in my organization, or you're a mission-driven individual and you want to create an organization around that, you have to first think about what is the market offering, even if you're, you know, a particular student, doesn't matter what kind of organization you're trying to create. You have to think about what are the effective business models in the market today, and then what is my unique value or principles or mission myself, and how can I overlap the two? And I think this is something that's been shown in all of the case studies with all of these innovators, is that they didn't necessarily know how they were going to go about doing it. They had a core mission that they started out with, but they continued to iterate on what was their business model that embraced and embedded those values in a very authentic way. And when they continued to innovate, continued to iterate, they ended up creating wonderful business models. They also were able to create very innovative strategies that were very unique in the market as well, too. So I know that one of the greenest CEOs in the United States before his passing was Ray Anderson, who's very famous amongst fellow clean tech individuals. He went from running an organization that was based on petroleum, that was polluting, did a complete pivot towards being one of the greenest carbon negative organizations that's publicly traded in the United States. Complete transformation. He just decided after reading a book one day that he wanted to embed his values in the business. They were already public at the time. He said, okay, I'm going to just try to do this. Yes. And it took him 2 years to convince his team to try. So it doesn't always happen fast, he ended up creating this one small breakthrough in their IP that ended up showcasing to the whole organization that it's possible. And that started a movement along the way. So it took until that first initial breakthrough. So I think when you're thinking about whatever it is that speaks to you and your mission, you have to think about, okay, what is the market offering? What is my value? How does it overlap? And then to continue to iterate and know that failure is going to be a part of the process and to be patient with yourself along the way.
And failure is information.
Yeah. You
know, for me, it isn't an indictment of an individual's competency. It's just, okay, it's more information that we can use to say, okay, what do we need to tweak going forward? What do we need to do to improve? And how can we use that information? I tell my students all this time, mistake isn't failure. Mistake is an opportunity to improve and an opportunity for you to create something wonderful and something that's going to be permanent and be impactful. So
yeah,
I've learned not to run away from my mistakes, and I try to tell my students to do the same, embrace those as opportunities for improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the greatest innovators, they've learned so much from their mistakes that actually sometimes is the whole creation of the product itself.
And, you know, for me, Vanessa, it's not only learning from their own mistakes, but it's learning from everybody else's mistakes.
That's true. Yes.
We have covered quite a bit of ground, and I've got a couple of more questions for you. First of all, thank you so much for taking time tonight. It's been a great conversation. I wish you much success with the book launch, and I'll be keeping tabs on that, picking up a copy myself when it's published. So one of my last questions for you tonight, if you could leave our listeners with one ultimate wisdom or takeaway today, Vanessa, what would that be?
I think I'll end our session with how we began it, in sense of reason for hope. I think that each and every one of us, we're so caught up in the day-to-day of our jobs and our lives, and we're always so busy trying to just get through the day that we often put aside our core value set that we want to embed into our day-to-day. Each of the innovators that I've seen out of the 60 case studies from the book, at the beginning, they didn't know how they were going to make it happen. They didn't know how they were going to take this dream, this vision, this value that they had that spoke, you know, so deeply to them, and turn it into a business or turn it into a way of life or to their role or to their job. None of them knew how to do that at the beginning. And for many of them, no one in the industry had done it before. But they continued to, as we said, iterate and continue that process. And they made what was once something that had just never been done before to something that was a reality and that was possible. So I would say, you know, the first step is thinking about what is it that you want to create? And then also thinking about what community do you want to surround yourself with to make that happen? Because we talked about failure being really helpful, but failure can only happen in an effective way if you have people to pick you up again and say, you know what, let's learn from what you just didn't do well at. And how can we learn from that? How can we push that forward? And you need a group of people to pick you up when you can't pick yourself up. And also to give you the perspective that you may not see yourself from what you just learned from. So I think that the first step is understanding that you want to do this, that you want to bring that value that you have that speaks to you to reality, and then to create a community around you so that as you iterate, as you continue to fail, as you continue to change and to adapt, you have a group around you who's able to give you the necessary resources to make that happen.
Absolutely. And we can't, regardless of the endeavor we engage in, we can't do it in isolation. We need community. We need support. We also need individuals who have differing views, differing opinions,
absolutely,
so that they can give us some perspectives that we can incorporate into our own core belief system that will allow us to effectively innovate, regardless of what the mission is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's why, you know, diverse organizations have some of the highest innovation rates, because diverse communities are able to effectively change and adapt, because you can look at the same problem from so many different angles.
Yeah. And, you know, like you mentioned with the businesses that you mentioned with their own sustainability practices, looking at what can we do to waste less of a particular product? What can we do to generate it into not only more revenue streams, but generate it into useful products that are going to have benefit nutritionally, aesthetically, cosmetically?
Yeah.
How can we increase the reach of that particular product? So I think you've made me a fan of sustainability practices tonight.
Oh, I'm glad. That's the goal.
you succeeded. So my last question, I'm going to give you an opportunity to promote yourself a little bit. How can people find out about your podcast, find out more about the Sustainability Experts Group, find out more about you, contract for your services? What's the best way for them to do that, Vanessa?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Vanessa Thompson. So you're welcome to look that up on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to connect with people, and you can follow some of the work that I'm doing on LinkedIn under Vanessa Thompson. Also, VanessaThompson.com, you can book me for speaking or workshops surrounding innovation. And if you'd like to look at the podcast or the group itself, it's called The Sustainability Experts. The website is the-sustainability-experts.com, and the podcast is The Sustainability Experts. So feel free to tune in.
And I'll make sure all of your contact information and resources get into the episode notes when we go live. So
thank you.
You're welcome. With that, Vanessa, thank you so much for a great conversation tonight. I really enjoyed it, and good luck with your future endeavors with the book launch. I'll be following that, and maybe we can do a follow-up next year if you're open to it, you know, after the book
comes out.
We can talk some more.
Yeah, that'd be great.
About the response to the book and other innovations that you and your sustainability expert group have been involved with. So that'd be a great follow-up conversation, I believe.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.